And welcome back to issue 28 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that chooses to have its annual in May. I'm one of your co-hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other co-host, David McVay. Boy, my mouth just didn't want to work right there. Richard, how are you? You're back!
I could say something there, but I won't. It's a G-rated show.
We've got to stop having the pre-show conversations, all right? Thank God you're back.
I was going to say, in this issue, I'm back. from your point of view, being the listener's point of view, you probably wouldn't even notice that I've gone because we pre-recorded a whole lot of stuff. I've just been away in Europe for 3 or 4 weeks, and we'll talk about that shortly. But because I've got a few comic-related things to bring back about that. But the rest of the show is pretty jam-packed. I've got Tales of Global Comicry, plus the New 52, Marvel's crossover events, and the Court of Owls.
Very good.
Then there's also DC annuals in May. Marvel Cosmetics, believe it or not. Batman selling out and the first X-Men. What the hell are they? Also, the Avengers make some money at the box office, apparently. Iron Man 3 casting and your weekly dose of Arrow. Plus, our kick-ass pick of the week, Preacher Gone to Texas. But first, because it's been a few weeks since I've been able to do this, our vintage pick of the week.
Inside the Palace Royal, the Lady Dorma anxiously awaits news of her prince.
Oh, my Lord Vashti, tell me quickly, how fares our monarch?
Fear not, my lady. Even now, Prince Namor and his valiant warriors are routing the savage barbarians. See for yourself.
Back, Katuma! Back from whence you came!
There will yet be a day of reckoning, Namor. Behold, without their leader, Atuma's army flees.
Namor is stronger, wiser, and braver. Such a man cannot be vanquished.
And yet, a barbarian such as Atuma never gives up.
Back in his lair, Atuma licks his wounds and broods.
And a cursed Submariner. Time and again he has turned back my army. I must find a new weapon. Something so superior, it cannot fail.
Back in Atlantis, Namor finds no reason to gloat over his victory.
You have driven him away, my prince. And yet your brow seems troubled.
So long as Atuma lives, we must be ever vigilant, my lady. Each defeat serves only to make him the more dangerous.
I'm sorry, all I can hear that entire clip is, it's a tumor.
David, I'm back, and yet your brow seems troubled.
He's gone back to his cave to lick his wounds.
He found no reason to gloat, even though he's so powerful and great and strong.
But we mustn't forget that the bad guy's name is a tumor.
Well, this is a show.
I think just wait long enough, Richard, he'll die because he's a tumor.
He's not a tumor.
He's not a tumor.
But this is from the Marvel Superheroes, our 1966. That was one of the Prince Namor episodes, a movie that, as you said, Marvel seems to be hell-bent on trying to bring this to the big screen.
Even though nobody's ever heard of him outside of the geek world.
No, and it has a theme song that goes a little something like this. I won't play the whole thing.
Stronger than a whale, he can swim anywhere. He can breathe underwater and go flying through the air.
Dear God. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. It is the Marvel equivalent of Aquaman.
Yep. Namor. it's the Marvel equivalent of Aquaman with a name that no one could possibly like. It's like, remember that Simpsons episode where Principal Skinner, completely independent of Jurassic Park, came up with the same idea and named it Billy and the Dinosaurus?
That's right. But just to make things even that little bit campier, they put little wings on his ankles.
Yes.
And then said he could fly.
And he's got this widow's peak and pointy ears. It's weird.
And his scaly little underwear. That sounds terrible, but they are. They're scaly little underwear.
Look, you know, I mean, that's a problem one in five men suffer, but I mean, let's just let's just move on.
Oh, dear. Now, Richard, what have you been reading while you've been away?
Well, look, I did a lot of stuff while I was away. Not all of it was reading. But when I was in Europe, there was a couple of things I noticed. Apart from the fact that in Paris, if you ever get there, head down to the left bank and go to a little street called the Rue Dante, which is like geek heaven. There's like every second shop is a comic book art shop or a toy shop or a comic book shop or something. It's great.
Sounds awesome.
It's really, really great. And I found this great little art book shop there. And as soon as I got in there, I realized the guy that was running it was actually Welsh. So we spoke for like half an hour about stuff. But I also saw two exhibitions while I was away. And I won't get into detail, but they were really, really cool. One of them caught my attention because we did Mouse a few weeks back.
We did.
And there was an Art Spiegelman exhibition on in Paris.
That's so cool.
It was very, very cool. And it was like heaps of art. Two of the coolest things there was like a lot of his original art and a lot of his early stuff where he was very, very outspoken about the way comic books were seen by the art community and that he really felt that they should be treated on an equal basis in galleries. But there's still this huge disparity between what's seen as what comic book art makes it into galleries and what doesn't.
Hmm.
And also the other thing that I thought was particularly good about this exhibition, they had everything. They had all of his comic work, his covers for The New Yorker, all that kind of stuff. But they also had the original audio recordings of his father that he took when he was researching Mouse.
Oh, that would have been awesome.
So it was just weird, so weird listening to that, having gone through that book in depth as we did, and then hearing that voice, you know.
Mm. And was that the voice that you expected to hear?
You know, it was bang on. Right. You know? It's a testament to his writing that he just captured the rhythm of that voice in his writing.
That's
so
fantastic.
The other exhibit I saw was the other great underground comic artist was R. Crumb.
Right, right.
And that was just so happened that had just launched. And unfortunately, I didn't know it was on when I first got there. And Robert Crumb was actually in Paris to launch it. And he made making a very rare public appearance. He actually lives in France now.
I was going to say, he never comes out.
No, and he's been living in France for like the last 10 years, I think, at least. But this exhibition had over 700 pieces of art in it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And it had stuff from his personal collection, like comics he'd collected as a kid and things that had influenced him, through to his earliest works and his most recent stuff, including an entire room that was just filled with the panels, original panels from his adaptation of the Book of Genesis. So that was amazing.
Yes.
And look, Europe is a continent that treats comics in a way that they don't even in America, on a level that they treat them as artwork. And testament to that is in the typical newsstands, you don't just get these flimsy little 22-page comic books with ads. You actually get these almost like little prestige format things that you can buy as your monthly comic.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So I really like that format. And I think if comics are going to survive – I think what collectors will end up moving to is those kind of prestige format ones where you get a little bit more value for money every time you get one.
But will they ever release those outside of Europe?
Well, I don't know. I think with the rise of digital, maybe that's where it's all going.
Ah, that's true. That's true.
So, look, the other stuff I've been reading, and I'll just quickly get into this because we've got a lot to cover this episode, but I think some of the big ones we can't ignore is DC's major events at the moment.
Right.
Of course, there's the second wave titles that have just come out, which we'll talk about in a moment. But the first thing I wanted to quickly mention was the Free Comic Book Day stuff. And there's a lot of great Free Comic Book Day stuff out there. And normally you get reprints or traditionally it was reprint sort of stuff promoting their upcoming titles. And DC kind of didn't reprint anything, but they gave you a one-off story written in the New 52, which basically gives you the origin of Pandora, the mysterious woman in red. Doesn't tell you what her connection is yet to the DCU, but we know where she came from.
Fantastic. I haven't had a chance to read that yet, so I am looking forward to it.
I won't spoil it for you, but basically it starts off with this Trinity of Sin, and it's the origin story basically of Pandora, what seems to be the question. Because it's basically this council of judges, a court representing this pantheon of judges who consider these three people that have before them the Trinity of Sin.
Right.
And one of them is apparently Judas Iscariot, but he's sentenced to walk the earth as a stranger to man, as a witness to what greed can do, and presumably he becomes the Phantom Stranger.
Right, right.
There's also a person who has been forced to forget his own name and has his features wiped out, condemned to forever question your identity and forever search your answers, for you will never find. So he might be the introduction of the question into the new 52.
Absolutely. Now, we've had the Phantom Stranger in before in that last little Pandora thing, didn't we?
We have, but this is kind of connecting his origin to Pandora. And apparently there's this one girl, and she doesn't know what she says. She says, well, what have I done? And they said, you opened the box. And she goes, you know, and you'll be she's given an eternity of loneliness, an eternity of pain, an eternity of being told I am evil because I opened a box, and that's Pandora.
Right.
And she's got the red hood, and that's all happening there. At the end of the book, it actually says, coming next year, the Trinity War.
All right.
So that'll be DC's next big event next year.
Absolutely. So, and then along with this, of course, we also had the second wave titles come out.
That's right. Have you read those yet, Dave?
I've read two of the key ones, which I read Earth 2, and I read World's Finest.
Well, I've read those two along with Dial H for Hero.
Oh, I read Dial H for Hero as well.
And I also read, there was one other one, and I'm just trying to remember
there
the
was
name.
There was G.I. Combat, which I haven't read yet.
Oh, G.I. Combat. Now, I don't see this. Look, it's a good book. Art's great. I just don't see it lasting.
No, look, I think you're going the way of Men of War, basically. Yeah. But let's talk a little bit about World's Finest and Earth 2, because they're actually linked.
They are. In fact, they both reference each other explicitly.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact is that Power Girl and Huntress, the stars of World's Finest, are both from Earth 2.
Well, let's start with Earth 2.
Yep.
Because it's the logical place to start. And it's basically... It starts with the end.
Yeah, basically. Actually, it's funny because after reading issue one, I mean, we don't want to spoil too much for these titles, but after reading issue one, I have no idea where they're going to go with it.
Well, because like they give the obvious like branch off for, pardon me, World's Finest.
Yeah.
And that's a story that I think has got worlds of potential in it.
Mm-hmm.
Pardon the pun. but, it, you know, it says in the very first page of World's Finest, you know, Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, of course, if they knew that here in Ravaged Metropolis would be their last adventure.
Hmm.
And, you know, you see how that comes to pass, and it has to do with Apocalypse.
Yep.
But where it branches off and where it leads into World's Finest has to do with basically that their world's Robin.
Yep.
And their world, Supergirl.
Yeah, and I thought it was very interesting because they also really, with World's Finest, they really weaved... They've set up these characters already in the New 52, and we just weren't even aware of it.
That's right.
And I actually find that very clever because I always felt that the World's Finest was going to be one of those, like, you know, mid-season replacement books, which is like, we need to fill the spots because we're canceling some books. But this looks like it was always on the books.
It feels that way, particularly at the end of Earth 2, there's a character introduction.
Yep.
Oh, it looks like an origin story. And I won't spoil it for people who haven't read it, because this is a book that's just come out this week. So I won't – also last week.
Last week, yeah.
But I won't actually spoil it for anyone. But there is an introduction of a classic Earth 2 character,
mm-hmm.
Almost in costume.
Yes.
already by the stage. And it's a good setup. And I can kind of see – how they're building, and they've been talking a lot in the build up to this of world building.
Now, the thing that really freaks me out about Earth 2 in particular, we should stress, is that Mr. Terrific is coming into it.
Yeah, I know they set that up.
They set that up, and they haven't killed off that character. Basically, they've just moved him to a different book, and that doesn't impress me at all because I was really hoping that character would just go away.
Look, but the thing is, in another book, the character's okay. Like, I mean, I think I could take Mr. Terrific in small doses. He didn't need his own book.
I don't know. I have to read that. That has to be proven to me yet.
I don't know. My T-spheres tell me that in his own book.
But wait, my T-mask is buzzing. You know? But when we go back to World's Finest, which is a book out of the two books, is the one I liked much more. Now, I'm a softie for Power Girl anyway. We know that. But forget the fact that there's the Power Girl connection. What I thought was fascinating was the fact that all the way through seven or eight issues of Mr. Terrific and the Huntress and her own miniseries, as Earth 1 characters, we now find out that these characters were Earth 2 characters the whole time who have been here basically living their life out here.
Yeah.
And I think that's fascinating. I think it's fascinating how they've done that.
And I really, really, really like that. And particularly with Huntress, who we had that mini series of.
And we immediately went, okay, so this is the other Huntress. And then to have it suddenly spun on its head and go back to the connection to Batman, which was the original Huntress origin, and you go, hey, this is interesting. You know, this is fascinating.
This is DC having their cake and eating it too.
Yeah,
and it really works well. All credit to Paul Levitz and James Robinson, who are behind building this second Earth and tying it into the new 52.
Absolutely. So I'm very curious to see World's Finest goes. I like the book a lot, and I want to see where. And I think the relationship between Huntress and Power Girl is great.
It's great. I think I'm quite happy to read a book with those two in it. You know, till the end of time.
All I need is them to bring back the original Power Girl costume, and it's 100%.
Yes.
I don't like the Power Girl costume, but that's personal.
But it's kind of like they introduce it in here as, hey, I've got a new, you know, I'm interested. Now, just one. I haven't got this listed in our things here. Before we move on to two major events that I wanted to talk about, I will quickly mention Dial H as well. I just wanted to quickly say, Green Arrow. New direction. You said you're not liking it. I can't stand it.
In fact, hate it. Hate it.
I absolutely hate it myself. I don't usually use it such a strong term. Reading issue, I think 9 was the last one that was out.
Yep.
Oh my god, that was terrible.
This whole sub story of him being out in the Arctic and this the redheads and the father and it's. I am actually bored. And
it's a perfect word for because I couldn't. I almost didn't finish the issue, and for me, you know, I've read hundreds and hundreds of Green Arrow stories. It just turned me right off, not because it's not my Green Arrow, just because it was bad writing.
I just don't care anymore.
No.
And that's the thing, and I think Green Arrow was a book that I was getting hotter and hotter on, and I thought, I can actually tell you the end point for me. The end point is that issue which has him sitting on the rooftop having the beer and saying there's other superheroes. That issue was like the high point for me of Green Arrow, and I thought, all right, this book is hot. You know what I mean?
And they've introduced him into Justice League.
Yeah.
And he's well written in that. And he's kind of going, I need them, you know, as much as they need me.
And then they just snatched defeat out of the jaws of victory. You know? Yeah. They just grabbed it and said, no, let's just mess it up.
It's a real shame because, you know, I love the character, but it's just a shame that such a pivotal book in the old DCU has become one of the weaker links.
Yeah, no, I'm really, really disappointed with what they've done with it. I'm just not impressed at all. However, on the flip side of that, what I am actually really, really impressed with at the moment is I really, really am digging the entire Teen Titans, Superboy, etc. crossovers with this Nowhere.
See, that's how you do a crossover, man.
Oh, damn straight. It is actually really good stuff, and I'm really curious to know where they're going with it.
Well, that crossover event's good. That's how you build up a slow crossover. Marvel have done a crossover recently as well, which is on a much smaller scale. They did it in 3 issues.
And we were talking about this as well because we had done the Daredevil book.
That's right, and then they've done the crossover now.
And it was good.
It was Avenging Spider-Man Part 1, Punisher Part 2, Daredevil Part 3. Yeah, it was a good story.
And it was great. And it also brought to conclusion the whole Punisher sidekick character. And it was a really good story. And the humor in it is spot on. The humor between Daredevil, Spider-Man, and Punisher with him basically saying, no, Frank, you can't kill anyone.
Yeah.
And making him use rubber bullets the entire time is hysterical. And all the way through it, Spider-Man's like, has he killed someone yet?
it's a testament to the three creative teams on those books that they kept a consistent feel across, but still maintain those three separate books as you went through.
Liked it a lot. And Marvel's been doing some really good stuff. And we've talked about this before. The current Marvel universe is actually some really, really entertaining stuff. I've caught up and read the complete 25 issues so far of the current run of Avengers, which is really.
Did you know they made a movie of that recently?
Did they? Wow, I better go see that. I think we've got a story about that later on.
I think so too.
And it's a really good run, and once again, great humor. It's really well put together. I think there might be a guy called Bendis who might have something to do with it.
He doesn't write much, though, but when he does, he writes really well.
Dear. Yes, it's very clever, so it's got some good stuff. The other thing I wanted to talk about was the current run of Incredible Hulk.
Right. I've not read it yet.
Which is odd, let me tell you that, but incredibly fun and just – let me just use that word again. It's very odd. And the premise of the current run, I don't want to spoil it because there's some pretty major reveals in it, but the premise of it is that Hulk finally got sick of Banner, and so he went to Dr. Doom and had Dr. Doom perform surgery on him and had Banner removed. And so now Banner and Hulk are actually two separate entities. And Hulk is just trying to live his life. He's actually down living with the mole people. And he's got a beard and long hair.
The mole people are everywhere in the
current month. They're everywhere. And Banner has lost his mind because basically a huge chunk of him has been taken out, his anger. And so he's madly trying to recreate the experiment because he's trying to bring the Hulk back. And he's turning everything under the sun into Hulks. He's living on an island. He's turned the animals into Hulk creatures. He's turned all the natives into Hulk creatures. But he can't do it to himself, and it's driving him insane.
Wow, that's a really interesting story.
It's a bizarre little book. It really is. But Hulk is hysterical. The actual character, now he hasn't got Banner involved anymore. He's hysterical. So well worth having a read. That's part of this whole stealth reboot thing, and it's actually really, really interesting.
Well, it goes without saying that the other major event that's happening at the moment is Court of Owls over in the DCU.
Wow.
Yeah, look, I mean, look, when DC gets it right, they get it very right.
Yeah.
And Batman, the current Scott Snyder run of Batman, is one of the finest books ever written.
Yes.
We've said that before.
Agreed.
And it's up to issue 8 now. I think issue 9 is about to come out, and it hasn't dropped the ball once. Some of the other Bat books aren't as good, but I think this Court of Owls things is tying them all together quite nicely. Even the latest issue of Batman and Robin fit in quite nicely. It was largely a Robin story. You know, I think what the last issue weight of Batman, the conclusion to that, when that giant suit was pretty awesome.
Yeah. Look, I think the Court of Owls thing is really interesting because it's also tying all of the Bat books, no matter how distant they are from each other, into one story.
Yeah.
And that's a really, really a mean feat. You know what I mean? And it's awesome. I mean, they were literally, the Court of Owls is gone on a rampage.
Yeah.
And the Talon are out.
It's amazing that they've, and I think this is a testament to DC, that they've managed to keep this cohesive feel to all their Bat books. I think it's very clever doing this big united push to get all their books on the same page going in the lead up to Dark Knight Rises coming out of the cinemas.
Mm.
So you have a Bat universe out there that does feel like you could jump in at any point and feel as though you're connected to the rest of the stories that are going on.
Oh, and we also established, I think we may have talked about, I can't remember if we talked about it on this show, if we talked about it, because we talk outside of this show, people. But they also, in one of the Bat books, brought Bane back into it.
Yeah, and they actually established that in this thing, Bane has in some point in the past broken the Bat's back.
That's
so
right.
That is still canon.
We have established continuity.
So I think that's, you know, all very synchronous with current DC entertainment marketing.
Mm, mm.
So, look, you know, brilliant. We've got another Batman story coming up a bit later. I think that's enough of what we've been reading. I'm sorry, David, if we haven't touched anything you've been reading lately.
Oh, I talked about the Hulk.
You've talked about the Hulk, but I think we need to move on
to
desperately
a
bit of this.
A little bit of this.
What a scoop!
It's been too long.
It's been so long. It feels like it's literally for you guys out there in listener land. It's been a week. For us, it's been 6 weeks since we've sat down and done this.
No, so. I was actually thinking it's been 6 weeks since we played that theme.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like we've got news, people.
Yay. And boy, have we got news this week. Heaps of stuff that's happened. Quickly, DC's announced new annuals. We've already had a couple of annuals.
Can I tell you how stupid I think this is?
Yeah, look, I agree too.
I think you can't have an annual after only being out for 7 months.
Well, I agree with that. But they've announced 5 new annuals. They bring out Detective Comics, Superman, The Flash, Green Lantern, and for some reason I don't understand, Justice League International.
Yeah. Can we just speak about Justice League International for 1 second?
Sure.
You know how we've discussed on this show, we actually discussed on this very show, 6 weeks ago or whatever it was, how we said that Justice League International is missing a heavy hitter and they've obviously got to have to bring somebody in at some point?
Mm-hmm.
Is it my imagination or are they trying to groom Batwing to come into this team?
Well, I thought Batwing, but also at the end of the last Justice League, they said to Green Arrow, you're not suitable for the Justice League, but there's another team that you'd be perfect for.
But even so, are either of these characters heavy hitters enough?
Arrow has been – they've tried that before because there was an alternative sort of covert Justice League that they tried out in the old DCU, and they had Arrow leading that, or Arrow heavily involved in that. And it kind of worked as a story, but not this Arrow.
No, and this Justice League is more of a league of rock stars.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that doesn't suit Arrow at all.
No. So, look, I don't get it. I think that's a book that's destined for the chopping block if they don't.
They got to do something. Do you know what they need to do? If they're going to actually make Justice League International work, they may need to bring in something like Huntress and Power Girl.
No, I was about to say that. They need the Supergirl. They need a super.
They need a super. That's right. They need a super in there. All right. Sorry. Yeah. I just got sidetracked because I was reading with the Court of Owls and the whole thing. Batwing has been in town and he's actually been in the last couple of Justice League Internationals. And I'm going, really, out of all the characters you could bring in, Batwing? This is a book I can't stand, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, so moving on.
Just really quickly, I wanted to announce that the 48-page annual issues will be coming out. And they're still going to pick up on the existing plot thread. So
yeah, I'm actually reading the Teen Titans one at the moment, which is important because it is actually part of the entire Nowhere tie-in.
Well, the only annual I'm looking forward to is the Batman annual, because it's going to be written by Scott Snyder, who's doing the current Batman book, and it's going to introduce Mr. Freeze. So, yeah.
And the only annual I really want, they're not making.
Which is that?
Justice League.
Of course, yeah.
Justice League isn't there.
Now, David, who were the first X-Men?
Jean Grey, Cyclops, Beast, Angel, and Iceman.
All good answers, but you're wrong.
What?
Well, I don't know. I got sent an email this morning from Marvel, and I put this up on my site. There's the links in the show notes. They just sent me a typically enigmatic ad that says it's just black and white, and it says the first X-Men August, hashtag first X-Men, and right. Their press release. All it said was, who were the first X-Men? Join the conversation on Twitter with first X-Men and coming in August. And it looks like it's going to be their next event.
Right.
Because there's a void that's not being filled by Avengers versus X-Men or Spider-Man.
Or the fact that they're still doing Fear Itself.
Fear Itself, you know.
How many events can Marvel actually run simultaneously?
If you know the answer, tell it on our Okay, so there's that happened.
Can we also, while we're talking about Avengers versus X-Men, can we talk about how stupid Avengers versus X-Men versus is?
Oh.
Is this not the most stupid concept for a comic book?
No, I'm sorry. It's AVX versus, to use its correct.
All right, I'm sorry. AVX versus. I read one. I'm not reading anymore. I'm sorry.
It's all of the action and none of the plot.
Yeah, basically, it's the concept of the comic book is they're isolating down into it so that you just see the individual battles between two people. And all I can think is, this is a video game, not a comic book.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, what the hell are they thinking with this? Anyway, moving on. Sorry, sidetracked. I haven't been able to talk to you for 5 weeks.
It's all well and good, David. Now, you know that copy of Batman number one you've been holding on to?
Oh, yeah, the one I've got over there, yeah, sealed up, yeah, with my coffee sealed cup up on it.
Yeah, but your 1940 issue, you've got that in near mint condition.
Yeah, well, I try, yeah.
Yeah.
God, I wish.
Now's a good time to sell it, because apparently this week, according to Comics Alliance, it sold for $850,000 at auction.
That's not bad. That's a little bit.
It's no Action Comics number one.
No.
But that's still one of the higher it's the highest price for a Batman book.
All right, so that's Batman number one. What would an issue one of Detective Comics go for?
Well, that's a lot. Well, when did he turn up? He turned up in about, what, issue 27 of Detective Comics?
Oh, that's what I want. That's actually issue there. Issue 26, yeah. 27. What do you think that's worth?
That would crack the $1 million
mark. I reckon. That would be big stuff.
Now, David, I know you like to look your prettiest.
Of course.
And I know you like your comic books.
Yeah, but you know I don't. So
now you can do both because Marvel has created and announced this week that together with Benefit Cosmetics, they've unveiled a beauty-inspired. I don't know what that means. A beauty-inspired comic book action hero named Spy Gal.
Spy Gal, all right.
Spy Gal's wise-cracking, paw-zapping persona was modeled after the paw-fessional, paw-minimizing primer.
Oh, my God.
And they've sent me a couple of pages from this, and It's what you'd expect.
I like the fact that she's putting on her makeup and she's got her little Bluetooth device in her ear at the same time.
Now, so, I wouldn't have even bothered covering this, but Phil Noto's did the art, and it's nice and it's pretty good. Like,
it's all right.
The style of art. It's kind of good. I mean, he's obviously done it pretty quickly for this one.
This is an afterthought. All right. Yeah, can I ask you this? It's that one panel with the elevator and there's a leg sticking out of the door. What the hell's that?
I don't know, but I'm liking the girl in the purple slip on the cover. I don't think she actually turns up in the comic at all, but she's on the cover. So, look, you know, people out there who like their cosmetics will know Benefit's been doing a whole lot of tie-ins with different products lately. I think they're doing one with Snow White and the Huntsman and a whole lot of other things like that. So Marvel have actually got – this is actually news to me – that Marvel have got a division called Marvel Custom Solutions, which is the custom publishing division of Marvel Entertainment.
Yeah.
So I imagine this is where they get to do their advertorials.
And I got
to
tell you –
if you were Coke and you came in and said, look, we need a fizzy hero. Someone who's cool and summery.
So, well, I got to tell you right now,
Coke
I'm actually
dude. No, Coke dude sounds like he's from the 80s. Coke dude.
I got to tell you, I'm actually looking for it right now to get the exact title because I want to make sure I get it right. But I actually managed to get my hands on over the last couple of weeks a new Avengers comic book. Which I think may be part of this division because it's actually called Harley Davidson Avengers.
Oh, no, you're right. It definitely is. I remember they announced this ages ago that there was a tie-in with the Avengers film and Harley Davidson. It's probably what Mark Ruffalo's writing when he comes up.
I read the first issue of it, and it is painful. It really is. And, of course, the last page is, and let's all mount our Harley Davidsons.
Oh, God.
You know, it's like, what? No, it's
Avengers assemble to our Harley Davidson.
Yeah, no, it's not good. And now it explains it a little bit because I was wondering why this thing had shown up.
Yeah.
And it's actually the Harley Davidson one is like the one of three. So here it is. Harley Davidson Avengers, number one of two. Sorry, of two. The cover actually has Cap riding a motorbike. And it's got carries the little Harley Davidson logo in the bottom corner. And you get through the whole thing. And at the end of the issue, the very last page actually has them all riding off on their motorbikes. And the bad guys in it are a group called the Road Force. And the very last page, of course, is a ad for Harley Davidson that just ride into an epic mission.
Way back in February, I did this story about this new ad that came out for Harley Davidson and Avengers, and the tagline on that was "Assemble your freedom."
Oh, it's terrible. No, please, everything right that Marvel is doing right now, this is not it.
No. It's sort of feeling a little too 1990s for me at the moment.
A little bit. But you know what? DC hasn't been immune to this either. Remember those little ads that were running in the middle of DC Comics? I think there was actually during that run of Green Arrow we really liked with the Blackest Night, where you'll be reading it and suddenly you come upon another comic book inside.
Yeah.
And it's like basketball players, and it was actually a shoe ad.
Yeah.
And you go, what the hell have I just been reading for the last 2 minutes?
You start reading them, you're thinking, okay, where's the bit where they say drugs are bad?
That's right. But the worst part was the first time I came across one, I was reading it going, wait, that was a strange cut. I don't know how this ties into the story. And I got to the end, I went,
you cut back and Green Arrow's changed shoes, you know?
Yeah, it's like, oh, it's a bloody ad. Yeah, they conned me the first time.
Yeah.
You know, fool me once. The problem was, and this is I swear to you, this is true. I was actually reading another comic later on, and I thought I had gone into one of those ads, and it was still a comic. Fool me twice.
Well, I think on the subject of cross-viral marketing, it's a good time to segue into movie news.
All right.
Movie news. Coke Man.
This episode of Behind the Panels is brought to you by Coke Man. The cool,
Coke-iest
refreshing
dude
hero.
Who ever coked Coke. Now, Dave, I'm not sure if you're aware that The Avengers came out at cinemas in the last couple of
years. I thought it was still coming.
Yeah, look, I was surprised. Someone told me yesterday that it was out. I thought I better go and see this thing before it leaves cinemas. Yeah, look, you know, we've all seen it multiple times now. David, were you at 3 or 4 now?
I'm at 3.
You're at 3. I've seen it twice, but in my defense, I was out of the country.
My son went to see it a second time today by himself. You know, so it's like this film, and we're already planning our next visit to it.
I think I'll have to see it again before it leaves cinemas. But
I'm curious. I got to tell you, I'm curious to go see a 2D session. I've seen
I wouldn't mind doing that. Let's make a date, David.
Yeah, absolutely. I've seen it twice in 3D now, so I'd like to see it once. I either want to see it once in 2D, or I think it might take a trip to my IMAX.
Oh, no. Is it playing at IMAX?
Oh, it is in the States. I don't know if it is here. So.
We might have to go to the States, but...
we'll just hop on our Quinjet and go. Yeah,
that's exactly what we're going to do.
Absolutely.
Now, it's made a bit of money at the box office. I don't know if you're aware of this.
It's made a few dollars.
Now, when it's opening day, like it made about $18 million in its midnight sessions, and that was good, yeah. You know, and they said that was good. Then it made $80 million on its opening Friday, and which is a big leap, and it's a world of difference a few hours can make. It still wasn't the biggest. It was still coming second to Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows. So they're predicting that it would probably make about $170 million for the opening weekend, just pipping out Harry Potter's $169 million.
Right.
But in fact, it went on to smash that record and made the initial report was that it made $200 million for the weekend. Mm. But then a second report came along saying, no, we got that wrong. In fact, it was $207 million.
Would you like to know what its current total are?
I think I looked it up. It's had the biggest opening week in history as well, in the US alone.
I've actually got the full figures here for you. I've opened up Box Office Mojo, refreshed it. This is to the minute. This is the most recent box office. So $220 million production budget. We should get that out of the way right now.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. So it is now currently taken $270 million domestically. And it is
$19,373.
That's right. And $533,300,000 foreign to bring our total to $803,319,373. Holy crap, Joss Whedon finally made a hit.
Yeah.
Now, I love Joss Whedon, but he's never been able to make a box office hit. And he's finally done it. So Joss Whedon, you can basically make any movie you want to for the rest of your life.
So we're pretty much looking within the next week or so, this thing's going to crack a billion.
And what I think is also really amazing is that it also seems to have accelerated Disney's plans. Because the original plan was to now make a few films and eventually get back to our Avengers 2. I think they were saying originally like 2015 or something like that.
Yeah.
They have now announced Avengers 2.
Well, now, I think, and I'm not sure about these reports, or conflicting reports around this, that I know that Bob Iger, Disney CEO, came out and said that it was underway, but I think it needs to be qualified that it's not. Like, there's still stuff to happen here that Marvel's still got to...
Well, it depends on how strong Marvel has a say in this.
Yeah, look, I mean, Disney can set a release date, you know, and that's what's going to happen there, but... I think Marvel's got a plan, and I think so far Disney would do well to trust Marvel at this point.
They've managed to make sense of it all so far. Now, by the way, you mentioned, I don't know if you actually noticed or not, because you didn't mention it to me, and I would have thought you immediately would have. Did you notice that Hoyts retweeted you?
Yes, I did. What we're trying to do in Australia, and I think we should do this, and I'd like to, I'm just going to make up a hashtag right now we should all start using, which is Avengers Marathon AU.
No, Marvel Marathon.
So Marvel Marathon AU. Let's do it. Hashtag Marvel Marathon AU on Twitter. Tweet this at Hoyts at Event Cinemas. Let's get some critical mass happening here, people.
What we want to happen is we want to have a marathon session of all 5 Marvel films, Iron Man, Iron Man 2, Incredible Hulk, Captain America, and Thor, and the Avengers as a one strung out marathon session.
Absolutely. So we want this to happen, and if you can help us make this happen by telling the cinemas basically that you want this to happen and that you would go and see it.
And we would pay $80-$100 bucks for the ticket. You know?
I would. Quite happy. Absolutely. And even though these are films we've all seen before, you know, it could be a one-off special event. If they want to go one step further, do this and do it for charity, great.
Yeah.
That would be fantastic. And, you know, maybe a charity of a choosing. Maybe if there's a charity organization out there who wants to make this happen, you know, that would be really great too. I know there were some really great marathons last year with Back to the Future trilogy happening for Parkinson's research, for example. Yep. So perhaps if there's something that someone cares about and we want to make this happen, but let's investigate this. So we can any ideas you've got, just use the hashtag MarvelMarathonAU, AU being for Australia, because we really like to see this happening here.
And this happened in America.
It did. It actually happened. There was an Avengers weekend.
Yeah, in the build-up to the Avengers, they showed you could buy one ticket, and they showed all of the Marvel films in order leading up to the release of Avengers, and it was a success. Mm-hmm. So let's do it here.
They will provide you a bucket in lieu of bathroom breaks.
I'm originally from Melbourne, and in Melbourne, the Valhalla Cinema used to regularly do 24-hour sci-fi days, where they would literally play 24 hours straight of sci-fi movies. You bought one ticket, and you just stayed there. People used to bring their pillows, their blankets, you know, the whole bit, and you just sat through 24 hours of sci-fi movies, and it was fantastic. And there was like a 5-minute break between each film, and the box of the candy bar stayed open the whole time. And it was just a great, fun time. You started at 7 in the morning and went through. They could do that. People will pay for this.
Yeah, look, and at the moment would be the right time to do it, because nothing can stop the Avengers. And if people want to extend it, people are going home after watching the Avengers and watching all those movies anyway. Mm-hmm. We'd love to see them extend, because let's face it, it's been, 4 or 5 years since Iron Man was in and Incredible Hulk were in cinemas. And I think it's really great to revisit those again.
And how good would it be just to see that continuity all in one go? And the reason why we think that this is actually a possibility is the fact that Hoyt's retweeted you.
Yeah, look, if Hoyts likes the idea and, I'm up for it, I'll go down. I've got a Hoyts locally. Hmm? If you want to do it down at the Entertainment Quarter.
Either that or at Event Cinemas in the City.
At Event Cinemas in the City, either one.
Put
maybe
it on
both.
One of the big screens, you know what I mean? Yeah. Or hold it at a couple of different venues. You could actually put it in the Bondi Cinema, in the City Cinema, you put it in several of the major chains. Or alternatively, the other one that was suggested to me was a Marvel Marathon in Gold Class.
That would be good too, but fewer tickets could be sold.
I know,
that,
but how hot would that be in those armchairs?
Oh, yeah. Lovely armchairs. Although you can probably fall asleep, because you can move the arms, you can move those chairs all the way back.
That's true. But look, I mean, the bottom line is this, is that they will make the money. People will go. Even if they fall asleep, it doesn't matter. People will go. Avengers have proven there's an audience for this.
Absolutely. So let's make this happen, people. But in the meantime, we've got some other sequels to look forward to.
I'll just say it one more time. $803 million.
Yeah. That's your audience who are looking at this.
That's right.
Okay. John Romita Jr.
I've heard him.
He would also like to go to the Australian Marvel. No. John Romita Jr. has said that Kick-Ass 2 films this summer.
Has he been drinking the same Kool-Aid that Mark Millar has been drinking?
I don't know. And he hopes to direct an animated segment.
What animated segment?
I don't know.
What the hell is he talking about?
Now, according to this article here that I've taken from Bleeding Cool, awesome comics website,
yes,
he said that Mark Miller was being it's not Mark Miller doing the talking this time. It's John Romita Jr. who illustrated the books.
Yep.
He was at a world record signing session in Las Vegas last week. And it was basically a whole bunch of comic creators getting together to do a I think it was to get a comic done. Written, inked, published in the shortest amount of time.
Right.
And a whole lot of creators did that together. Now, anyway, one of the listeners there sent in this little thing saying that somebody asked Romita about Kick-Ass 2, and he said that not only have the deals been done, the production is going to go ahead this summer and shoot, they're looking at a May release date, as I said.
Yep.
Chloe Moretz is going to be busy shooting Carrie from the start of June. So she's going to try and fit in Devil in the Deep Blue Sea into a calendar somewhere this year, but that would mean that she couldn't be in Kick-Ass 2, so I'm not quite sure how that's
I see
work.
One problem with her being in Kick-Ass 2.
That she's too old?
Yes.
She's too old. Get over it.
I have a problem with the fact that she really is too old to play Hit Girl now.
Yeah, maybe that's the... Maybe that's the problem. But apparently they say something there about an animated segment as well. I'm not sure.
Animate all the segments with her in it, right?
Maybe that's it, yeah. Now, the Hit Girl comic book series, I've been seeing Mark Millar talking about that.
I'm more interested in that at this point.
Yeah. It's meant to be coming out soonish. If not, it's coming out already. And forgive me if it's out and I've missed it. But again, out of the country people. Now, apparently it was meant to come out around June-ish, but maybe it's been pushed back. I'm not quite sure what's happening there.
Right.
But Mark Millar on Twitter was talking, he was giving quotes from issue 3 with Hit Girl. So
you know what my theory is? My theory is that Mark Millar went to John Romita Jr. and said, "You got to say this stuff because nobody believes me anymore."
Well, speaking of things that I don't know what to believe anymore, Iron Man 3, it will be happening.
Yes.
It's the second Marvel movie that's coming out next year. It's going to come out on November 15th, 2013.
Yes.
It's
scheduled 3rd of May.
3rd of May. It's going to be the first one out next year.
It's the first one out.
Oh, for some reason I was thinking Thor was the next one out. Okay, so Iron Man 3 is due out on the 3rd of May next year. And then Thor 2 is going to be expected out on the 15th of November next year.
I'm surprised they're splitting them so far because the Marvel films have always traditionally only been a month apart.
Yeah, well, they are. In 2014, it's going to be Captain America 2 in April and then a mystery film in May. So that's what's
I'm putting money down right now. I still think it's going to be Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
That's what I'm banking on. I'm putting money down. $20.
I reckon you're probably right. But one of the big things that's come out this week is that Jessica Chastain was up for the role, presumably of scientist, sexy scientist character.
Sexy scientist character.
In Iron Man 3, which is allegedly based on Iron Man Extremis, which we'll be talking about next week.
Absolutely.
And but she has said on her Facebook page that she's not taking that role. She said her schedule basically doesn't work out. She's sorry to disappoint everyone. She said, you know, everyone, Shane Black and everyone on the team is wonderful, and hopefully there'll be another Marvel film in my future. So whether that's sort of insider knowledge or just wishful thinking, I don't know. Would love to see Jessica Chastain in the Marvel U.
Doctor Strange's girlfriend. Sorry, excuse me.
Yes. But Rebecca Hall has now been, who was in The Town, I think, most recently, is apparently up for the role that Jessica Chastain's not able to take. So,
and now, knowing extremists like I do, because we just read it recently, and thinking of the character I think this person is supposed to be playing, I actually think Rebecca Hall suits her better.
Probably does, yeah. So, look, all up in the air at the moment. It's all rumor until Marvel issues a press release. But, look, really looking forward to the next Iron Man film. They set up so much of that in The Avengers, where that's going to go. So, let's face it, Avengers was almost Iron Man 2.5.
We're riding high on Avengers right now. Come on.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's just get that happening. The other thing I'm riding high on, final bit of news is, this is only going to be a mention, CW has picked up Arrow for a full season.
And The Cheer?
Sorry?
And The Cheer?
Oh, sorry, The Cheer.
You have been away too long.
Yeah, I forgot that I had a soundboard. So there you go. They've picked up a bunch of other series as well. This is actually apparently CW picked up more pilots this season than any other season. So I'm not quite sure what that means for them. Some industry analysts say that's not a good sign that they're picking up so many series.
Right.
But, there you go.
Yeah, but can we also put out
I think if they play it right, this is a surefire winner for them. So it could be another Smallville.
Yeah, or it could be another The Cape, which failed dismally. But what I think is very interesting is – sorry to bring a downer on it, because I actually really want to see Arrow. But I would like to point out that some of the other things around this are the Carrie Diaries, which is Sex and the City, and Beauty and the Beast starring one of my favorite actresses, Christine Kruick, who I can't stand. Stand her. So look, they're releasing. They're releasing a lot of pilots, but I think a lot of these are going to fall by the wayside really quickly.
I agree, but Arrow, I'm obviously excited about, but it could go either way.
Yeah, so, no, I love the image they've released for Arrow. I really do.
Look, if that's indicative of the series, then I say let's go for it.
Absolutely, bring it on! All right, we got to get into our pick of the week, though, don't we?
We're going to pick of the week, but before we do that, let's just have a little bit of feedback because we've been away for a while.
I said, go for it.
we've had two really nice bits of feedback. I'm going to read out the first one. A couple of these are a few weeks old because we we've been away.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've been away. And it's but look, the first one was on our Facebook, which is facebook.com/behindthepanels. And if you'd like to leave a comment, please do.
And look, and lots of people have written stuff in there. We just don't have time to read it all, unfortunately.
No, but this one we particularly liked. It was from Joel Barker, who said, and this is exactly the response we want from the show, who said, "I've been listening to the podcast since you quote-unquote forced me to for the Walking Dead Blu-ray comp. For someone who's never been interested in comic books, I strangely keep going back for more episodes." That's great to hear. It must be the way you guys present the show, probably is. You never pull any punches. You tell it like it is, and you seem to have a lot of fun doing it. It's great entertainment and on my trips to and from work. But now something has changed. I bought a comic book, a digital one, but a comic book just the same. After listening to your recent New 52 show, I thought I'd have a look at Justice League issue number one. In the space about an hour, I'd bought all of the Justice League and most of the Superman family of books. Haven't quite finished reading all of that, but am enjoying it immensely. I've also lined up my next series, Kick-Ass. Love the movie, so I can't wait to read the book. So thank you for a great show and giving me something new to do with my time. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Joel. Thank you for that wonderful feedback.
That's amazing. And I got to tell you, that is the one thing about the digital age of comic books, which makes it so easy to get comic books. when I first got my iPad, going back a while now, when I first got my iPad, one of the first things I loaded up was Comixology, of course.
That's why I bought my iPad.
Absolutely. I bought mine because of the demonstration of the Marvel app, which was amazing. Yes. But I remember firing up Comixology, and I thought, oh, I'll buy a comic book. And the first thing I did was I got a few of the freebies. But then I bought Thor, issue one, the new J. Michael Straczynski run. And I hadn't read Thor for ages, but there was a Thor movie coming. So I thought, okay, I'll buy that. It's only a dollar, something like that. I bought that. By the end of the night, I had read them all.
Yeah.
I had bought them all, and I had read them all. And it's like, that is too dangerous.
It's like what iTunes did for music. It's not as mainstream yet, but it's getting there. And I'd like to see that $800 million that Marvel sold in film tickets transition to the comics market as well, pick up a few new readers. So
absolutely,
if we're helping that process, that's fantastic. That's the best feedback we could possibly get.
Now, I've got another email here we'll read very quickly. This is actually from Matt. He wrote this a while ago, but you've been away. So
this is Matt White?
Matt White, yes, it is. Yep. He's from the DLCcrew.com, which is actually the forums and gamers who are kind of attached to Josh's website.
Right.
They're independent, but they're kind of attached to all of that. But he actually wrote, "Hi guys, loving the new podcast, though not a comic reader," which I thought was very interesting. Says, "The only comic I happen to own is Kick-Ass, and that was Dave's doing when he loaned me the digital copy before the movie came out." He goes, "It made me go and buy the hardcover edition of it. Now that number two is out, I may need to find out where I can grab a copy. Anyway, I know you guys love playing your video games when time allows, but how do you feel about video game tie-in comics, i.e. the Mass Effect series? These are apparently fill-in bits and pieces of the story that happens between the games, mainly focusing on the non-player characters from the games. Would love to hear your thoughts as real comic readers on them, whether in a show or not. I just about to start on them as soonish if I can stop playing the third game long enough." Oh, and Richard, I've now got around to putting a link to the real bits on my site.
I'll have to return the favor shortly.
So now the question is, and I think what we're going to do is we're expand this question out just a little bit though, Richard, which is, what do we think of tie-in comics?
Yeah, look, you know, I think comic books, as I was saying at the top of the show, are an art form like any other art form, but they're also an entertainment medium. Mm. So whatever you can do to get people reading them is a fantastic thing. I mean, you know, not every movie is a Terrence Malick film.
Yep.
The same way not every movie is a Michael Bay film.
Yep.
You've got polar opposites there. And the comics world's the same. And it's that sort of thing that we talked about with Fox News. You know, their assumption is that a comic book is Archie Comics. But there's just like, you know, a whole spectrum of comics. And as wide as it is in the West, it's even wider in places like Japan with manga, where there are comics targeted for tennis playing golf enthusiasts, you know? I mean, that is who happen to have a harem of women in the basement. You know, that is then there'll be about 15 titles dedicated to that subgenre in Japan, you know? What I think, to answer that question in a wider context, I think tie-in comics are great. I think tie-in comics that are good are even better. I think all too often it's the sort of books that we were talking about just earlier, these cheap cash-ins from these kind of creative solutions divisions that come out purely to sell something.
Yeah.
Now, if that's what Mass Effect comics were doing, but from what you're saying is they're picking up on the third sort of tier characters who are NPCs and stuff. That sounds good to me. That sounds like they're actually building on the world of the thing. And kind of like, okay, it wasn't essential reading, but that one we did a few weeks ago, the
Fury's Big Week.
Yeah. It wasn't essential reading, but it built on the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It was a tie-in book. It was an ad, of course, but it actually enriched your viewing because it actually gave you a different perspective on maybe what was going on behind the scenes. Those sorts of books, I think, are absolutely great.
I agree.
And as a fan, you want to keep the experience going sort of offline or you know, off screen as well. So yeah, that's great. Cheap cash-in tie-ins, their ads, they're just as good as the trailers that run before the film or run before you know, the game.
What I was going to say about it was that I'm not a huge fan of adaptations, so I'm not a big, huge fan of, like, the movie adaptation, you know, especially when it comes to comic book movies, because you sit there and go, okay, so we're making a movie which is an adaptation of a comic and then making an adaptation of the movie to make a comic, which just doesn't make sense to me at all. But that being said, some tie-ins work really well. Now, I actually happen to have read a couple of the Mass Effect comics. I read Mass Effect Redemption, which is the lead into Mass Effect 2, and it was damn good. It was a really, really good tie-in, which set the story in motion so that when you started the game, you already had this background. And it worked really well. I've read some really cheap and nasty tie-ins that just don't work very well. As a really good example of some good tie-ins, though, when the movie Red was coming out. Now, it's based on a comic book which is literally three issues and nothing like the movie.
Yeah.
But what they did was they got back that creative team and they wrote four prequels, each one tracking one of the characters to lead up to the movie. And they were really good. They told the backstory on each of these characters. And that was a really, really good tie-in, and that worked really, really well. So I think you're absolutely right, Richard. I think it really comes down to the quality of the book, and I think it really comes down to what they're trying to say and what they're trying to do. The prequel comic of Tron for Tron Legacy was really good, and it set a whole bunch of stuff in motion that actually, if you hadn't read it, some of the movie goes right past you.
Yeah, and actually the funny thing is the licensed – every licensed book is filling in a gap – is trying to fill in a gap. The whole point, like, you know, from – I know I read 10, 15 years ago Star Trek books, which were, like, you know, set between Star Trek 3 and Star Trek 4. They're filling a gap, you know. That's what they're – because a lot of the time they can't do anything else because everything else is on screen.
Yeah.
You know, and you can't mess with that. But I think – that's good. To me, it enriches my viewing at best, and I can ignore it at worst. So.
Exactly. Yeah. So there you go, Matt. That's our opinions on tie-ins.
And if you have any other questions, please send them to comics@geekactually.com or hit us up on the Facebook at facebook.com/behindthepanels.
Wow, nice hat. Nice radio voice. And now
you can read our tie-in comic.
You can read our tie-in comic. And on that note...
Well, see how you like this. What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It certainly is. And we're going to have to kick through this pretty fast, Richard.
It's Preacher. So next week we're looking at...
All right, now, just a quick disclaimer. We carry we actually don't even carry a clean tag, but we don't carry an explicit tag on this show, and we try and keep it family friendly. And we chose Preacher to do as the book 5 weeks ago before you went away, and then we revisited the book and kind of realized that it's really not family friendly. So we're going to have to kind of heavily abbreviate our review of Preacher because it's rough.
Well, I just wanted to take a line out of Joe R. Lansdale's introduction to the trade paperback edition of this. He said, because there's only one Garth Ennis and only one Steve Dillon, only one Preacher, a tale out of Ireland dragged through Texas with a bloody hard-on wrapped in barbed wire and rose thorns, and it's out to get you. And that's probably the best description of this book I've ever read.
And I think if we're going to do this, now I do have something here. I think, where is it? No, maybe I don't. Oh, I thought I had a beep on the board. I thought I had a censorship bleeper on the board. I thought I'd better keep my finger on that just in case. So we're going to...
I could just do this every time. It'd be...
Yeah, we will. We will maintain our family friendly tag throughout all of this. But as I say, we are going to have to kind of dance around the edges on this because it really isn't family friendly, and it's very hard to talk about some of this. But basically, give us a summary of Preacher.
Well, I'm going to give you the summary that's on the back of the book because
it's cheater.
It's the equivalent of reading the Internet Movie Database.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that's fair.
Jesse Custer is a small-time minister slowly losing his faith until he merges with a half-angelic, half-demonic being called Genesis. Together with Tulip, Jesse's trigger-happy ex-lover, and Cassidy, a hard-drinking Irish vampire, Jesse sets out on a bizarre road trip from the heart of Texas to the bitter soul of New York City.
Okay, and there's lots of swearing. Good night, everybody.
It is. Look, I think what we'll do is we'd similar to what we did with Watchmen a few weeks back. There's no point in reviewing this in the traditional sense because it's been out there for a while. It's a much beloved book. This is written by Garth Ennis, the guy that has brought us a book that we previously covered, which was The Punisher. Welcome back, Frank.
And a brilliant book that is.
That's a terrific book. And this is a very similar book. In fact, I think...
same artist, you know, isn't it?
It's the same team. Yeah. It's the same team doing it. And when he came to Punisher a few years later, he kind of brought that same irreverent humor and very, very black comic view of a violent world that he established in Preacher. Now, I remember when I came to Preacher, this is a book that was originally published back in 95, I believe.
I think so,
And I sort of came to this... At the time that this came out, I'd started reading. I'd been reading a lot of things like Superman because I think in 93 they did the whole death of Superman thing.
Right.
And around the same time, Nightfall, which was the man that broke Bane breaking Batman's back, and that whole saga came out. That's what mainstream comics would do. I think over in the Marvel you were having the Clone Saga and all that sort of stuff going on. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, DC Vertigo had this book, and it was introduced to me by Reputation, and I wasn't prepared for what I read, and I ended up reading it in trades over the years, and I sort of got into it after I'd sort of cynically left comics, thinking it's all just cheap events now and, you know, all that kind of stuff. Because then look how far we've come.
it's all still cheap events.
Yeah, exactly, And then I got introduced to this, and this was a book that really did change my view again of what a comic could be. And back in 95, the DC Vertigo label wasn't necessarily new, and mature reader comics weren't new, but Ennis is taking it to a whole new level. And as we said before, Ennis had written really hardcore stuff in the past that people have ignored, but then once he started doing things like Preacher and he was established and started doing his run on Punisher, people have gone back and re-looked at Ennis, and Ennis is now... kind of the R-rated Brian Michael Bendis in a lot of ways.
I still think I prefer Bendis as a writer just from my personal tastes.
But, I just meant in terms of the fact that he writes a lot.
He does.
A lot of it is very good, and he has defined a universe as much as Bendis has with the Marvel universe.
Yeah, he's incredibly prolific. I'm actually reading Jennifer Blood at the moment, which is one of his most recent things.
Right. And The Boys has been going for a while. He's actually done it for so many companies as well.
Yeah, well, Jennifer Blood is Dynamite.
I think The Boys is Image, possibly.
Possibly. So he's everywhere at the moment.
And he's doing the Marvel Max line. He's just released a new Fury book that's out this week or last week. It was Fury Max.
I think if you put them side by side, I still think Bendis has probably written more.
Probably, look, you know, and I'm not arguing. I'm not
comparing. There's probably about 10 clones of Bendis and about 8 clones of Garth Ennis. So
yeah, no, exactly right. No, Bendis is prolific and he'll never be caught up with. But I think I've read a lot of Ennis stuff over the years, and most of it's pretty good. But Preacher to me is the one I'll always come back to. It is such a cinematic book, I think, to start with. Mm. But there was talk of adapting it a few years ago as an HBO series, which I think is where it belongs.
And then then it was talked about a feature film, and then that fell apart. Then they came back. There's still talk about it being a cable series. I don't know. It's one of those books that I'm not sure. There's part of me that goes, oh, yeah, that'd be a really good idea to put that on screen. And the other part of me goes, actually, I don't think we want you to touch it.
It's funny because it's such a violent thing, and that in and of itself wouldn't preclude it from being adapted because we've got The Walking Dead on television.
That's true.
But I think the reason that would be difficult to adapt this is because it squarely raises its middle finger to everything that America holds sacred.
It is basically having a go at religion. It is having a go at the conservatives. It is having basically it's having a go at everybody and everything. And it's not afraid to go there.
Well, it's written by an outsider. I mean, it's got that, you know, we said it in the back, it's got that irreverent Irish sense of humor that Garth Ennis has. Mm. And he's written that explicitly into the character, into Cassidy.
Cassidy, yeah.
But Jesse himself is kind of like, he's not explicitly Irish, but he is, he may as well be, you know?
Yeah, exactly. But Cassidy has definitely got that voice.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But Cassidy is the hard, like, they're both hard drinking. Jesse was a hard drinking character at the start, and I show you in flashback what he was like before he merged with Genesis. So he was a hard ass to start with.
He was a hard ass to start with, and then given the voice of God.
God, basically, which he uses in creative ways. Now, in this first seven issues, which we're looking at here, this is actually 66, appropriately enough, issue series, and it was a great thing. It did kind of wind down a little bit towards the end.
Yeah, well, you know, it's interesting because I actually was a latecomer to Preacher, a very latecomer to Preacher, and I only read it for the first time. I think I only read it about 2 years ago, and I actually had trouble starting it. And it was funny because Josh was the one who actually got me involved. He loaned me all the trades. And right. said, you got to read this. This is life-changing stuff, basically, you know. And I kept picking it up and reading the first. I think I read the first four pages about 10 times. And I just had a lot of – it wasn't picking up momentum for me. And I finally forced myself to read past those first four pages and got hooked. And I actually polished it off really fast. But the thing that I found with it was – It reaches for me a certain point, and I think it's this is going way ahead, but you'll know what I'm talking about, where after he becomes the sheriff of the town.
Yeah.
I think for me that's the end of the book, and after that, for me, it goes downhill.
Right.
And I think the second half of the series, when we get more into the Star character and all that sort of stuff, really falls apart for me. It just loses its momentum. But the first half, the first... I don't know, 30-odd issues, I think are possibly some of the most interesting comic ever written.
Right.
I'm not going to say best, because I don't think it's always perfect, but it is never not entertaining.
And for those of you not familiar with the book, the power of God that he's merged with this being called Genesis, which is essentially a union between an angel and a demon, really. Mm. And he merges with this creature, and he's been given the word of God, which, you know, he can actually go up to people and say, you know, eat your gun, or, you know, count 3 million grains of sand, and they have to comply.
Well, I just to give an illustration, it's one of my favorite panels in the entire series. It's actually in, I think, issue 3, when one of the angels comes to Earth and is in the form of a big glowing angel of light, like, you know, traditional angel, and basically saying, yo, behold the power of God, and blah, blah, blah. And Jesse just goes, I'll cut the expletives, but basically just to shut up.
Yeah.
And suddenly he's just the little angel guy with his white hair, and he goes, right. And it's such a Monty Python moment.
Well, this is the thing, and the reason this could be such a difficult thing to adapt, because the basic story is that his basic mission in this is to find God and to hold him to task for his dereliction of duty.
Because he's mad at him.
He's mad at God and says, look, you're not doing your job. I have to do it. So I'm out to get you. Yes. And, like, you know, they introduce in these first seven issues, the characters that are essential to the story later.
We should stress God is on Earth somewhere.
He's
wandering around. He quit heaven.
Yeah.
And so he's wandering around Earth somewhere. So that's why Jesse's trying to find him.
And this is essentially a road, you know, movie, road story, road book, you know. And it's really quirky. And there's all sorts of really weird characters that are either psychosexual characters, or they're, you know, just perverted, or they're violent, or they're otherworldly, or whatever. As we said, his two closest companions are Tulip, who's his former girlfriend. And who's Cassidy, who's a 100-year-old Irish vampire.
So he's an Irish vampire and she's a hit woman.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're his two closest friends. meanwhile, there's also chasing him down is this sort of killing machine called Saint of Killers. Yep, and there's also one of the people, there was a sheriff that he told to, how do I put this politely?
I'm dying to find out how you're going to say this.
Well, he told the sheriff to go himself. and so the sheriff had no choice but to go himself. And he did, and that was the end of him. He took that quite literally.
Because you have to when you hear the voice of God.
God, you know, and he had no choice but to do that. His son, who is known affectionately as Arseface, because he was inspired by, if I remember correctly, he was inspired by Kurt Cobain to kill himself. to basically suck a
shot. We did say that this book really pushes boundaries, right?
So basically, you know, to suck a shotgun. But it went wrong. So he basically has a caved-in face that looks a little bit like a sphincter.
And nothing he says is audible, basically. It's all subtitled.
And spoilers for later issues, he does go on to become a bit of a cult figure himself. and has a successful rock career despite the fact that no one can understand what he's actually saying.
Kind of like Kurt Cobain.
Yeah, exactly. I think that'll probably get us into more trouble than anything else we say.
Come on. Even Weird Al Yankovic actually hits a subtitle his parody because nobody can understand what he
says.
That's
true.
Kurt Cobain mumbled. That's what he did.
So understandably, this is a very controversial thing. As I said, it's a middle finger to all the sacred cows.
Yeah, and as the series goes on, I mean, we're only doing the first seven here, but as the series goes on, it brings in the Pope, it brings in the Pope's Secret Service, it just goes absolutely crazy, and that's why I think the second half doesn't actually work for me as much.
No.
But it literally, I mean, we get to a point where we're actually dropping nukes on things. You know, it's nuts. This book just is out of its mind. But at its core, it's actually a book about friendship. It's a book about these people traveling the road together, and they are all crazy in their own right, but they're compelling characters.
And I think that's Garth Ennis's real strength, and we saw it in Welcome Back, Frank, creating this eclectic group of characters who are completely dysfunctional individually, but together they kind of make it work.
Although in some panels they're actually dysfunctional together as well.
They are, and some of them quite graphically dysfunctional together. But look, at the end of the day, this is a book I love, and I always have loved it. And as I said, it doesn't maintain that same level of – I think it's like anything. Like, you know, you can't shock people 66 issues in a row.
Well, and there's very few book series like Why the Last Man, which managed to maintain its momentum all the way through its run – and was fantastic. Preacher tries. It really does try to keep introducing enough new stuff to keep you going. The problem is they start at such a high level that it becomes too much, I think. And I think the whole Star character actually went too far. And I think that was probably one of the reasons why the Star character is a guy who basically is – it's like the Pope's Secret Service or something, isn't it?
Yeah, Star.
Sorry?
The Hair Star.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about. Yeah, and basically – he is chasing Jesse down as well, and he keeps losing body parts throughout the whole thing. And it's just bizarre, you know? It's just bizarre.
There's also later a mafioso known as Frankie the Eunuch.
That's right.
So we got that happening. We should point out there were a few spin-offs as well going throughout. There was a Saint Achilles spin-off. There was the story of You Know Who, which was actually the story of the origin of Arseface.
Yep.
There was Good Old Boys spin-off. According to Wiki, there's also Cassidy, Blood and Whiskey story. There's One Man's War and Tall in the Saddle.
I had trouble with the spin-offs. I actually couldn't get through them. I actually read the 66 issues of Preacher, tried to read the spin-offs and couldn't get through them.
No, look, I mean, the main story is enough. Look, again, it's a great story. I love it. I love Garth Ennis' stuff. And possibly I've liked some of Ennis's more recent stuff, because I think a lot of the stuff he's done more recently has been these very short, sharp maxi series or mini series where he has an arc, he tells it, and then moves on. And I think Preacher, he has written long form things as well, of course, but this is I think his strength is in those very clearly defined arcs, such as Welcome Back, Frank. which has a very clear beginning, middle, and end.
And I will also give him credit for sticking with Preacher for as long as he did. Because I've noticed that with Jennifer Blood, which is, I think it's up to issue, I think it's like 15 or 16 or 18 or whatever it is, but he's not writing it anymore.
No.
So he got it started and he moved on. But with Preacher, he stuck with it right to the end. And I give him full credit for that, you know?
I mean, he's still writing for Marvel, Avatar, and Dynamite, apparently. He's been writing for Marvel since 95, but he hasn't written anything for DC since 2007, apparently.
What's he writing for Avatar? Do we know?
For Avatar, I'll just have a quick look.
Is that the boys?
At the moment, I'm just having a look. He's right. I think that might be... and he's writing Crossed. He's gone back there doing Crossed Badlands at the moment. Crossed
is, okay.
He originally wrote Crossed back in 2008 and 2010. And literally in the last month or so, Crossed Badlands has come out, which is a spin-off from that or a follow-up to that. And that's quite full-on as well, apparently.
Cool.
The Boys is being written for Dynamite.
So he's got a couple of things at Dynamite. Interesting. Then we should say we actually bagged out Dynamite quite heavily when we did the John Carter book, but they do some interesting stuff as well.
They've got a lot of good stuff, actually, yeah. And they get a lot of good – they get a lot of licenses. They get a lot of movie licenses, and that particular license wasn't a very good one.
No.
We did John Carter, The Bassoon of Tomorrow or something.
The Wall of Bassoons or whatever it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
The comic book series that shall not be named.
which was terrible. And unlike the current Marvel John Carter Gods of Mars book, which is actually quite good. But you're right. They do actually do a lot of good stuff, and there's some interesting stuff going on there. And I think this is a matter with comics. There are so many things to read each month, and unfortunately, we only have so much money and time. And it's really a matter of picking and choosing. And I think places like Dynamite really have to put their best feet forward.
And speaking of picking and choosing and having to spend your money, Preacher is one well worth doing.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's available in a whole lot of different formats. You can get it in trade paperbacks, and they're usually about 7 issues each. You can get this arc that we're talking about now, just as Preacher Gone to Texas, which is the first 7-issue arc.
Mm-hmm.
You can get that, and I think you can get most of the books in that format, and I think they've actually released all of the trade paperbacks they released were all based on the story arcs. So that's the next one following this is called Until the End of the World, if you want to keep going. They did release them in hardcovers as well. They released them in 6 hardcovers, and each hardcover had 12 issues each.
Jesus.
So that's a slightly more compact way of collecting them. So you've only got 6 things to collect.
But can you collect a complete Preacher? That's what I want to know.
Well, Marvel at the moment have been doing these terrific omnibus kind of collections. We were looking at them the other day in a comic shop in the city, and they're huge.
Yeah, they are. They're great.
So there's no reason why 66 issues, I'm not quite sure how many pages that works out to be roughly, because these are long issues, though.
Yeah.
Issue one's like 54 pages, and the rest are all in their 30s, I think.
Close to 40. They're like 37, 38 pages. So this is a long book.
This is. I mean, these first 7 issues alone total 200 pages, almost.
Yeah.
So it's a fairly long thing. So you multiply that out. We're looking at a long book.
Yes, but we held in our hands over the weekend as well, over this week, I should say, the New 52 combined books, and that was a monster book.
That's about 1,200 pages, I think.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
It was awesome to hold that in my hand.
I have that in Preacher. Actually, the one other good hardcover to get for Preacher, and I can't say this enough, is Glenn Fabry does the covers for this, and they're magnificent. Each of the covers have these beautiful painted covers which look just amazingly epic. They actually released a separate collection just of his covers.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well worth getting if you just want to appreciate the artwork, and you didn't get the original single issues, and it's the artwork kind of without all the the logos and stuff all
over
it as well.
That's amazing. That shows you how powerful and important these books are, that they can release just the covers.
Yeah, and I think, well, I mean, like, you know, and it also shows you that, you know, people read comic books for different reasons. Some people read them for to be a because they like the story. Some people read them because they like the writer. Some people like it because it's like swearing and titties, basically. other people
yeah,
read
I'm
them.
In that camp.
What was that?
I'm in that camp.
That camp. Absolutely. Other people read them because they like the artwork, and I think, you know, things like Preacher are ones where you can appreciate them on various levels.
Yeah.
You know, this book has had a huge legacy behind it. I'm just looking here. It's referenced in other books the same way it references other pop culture. Back, IGN apparently declared that Preacher was the third greatest Vertigo book behind one we previously did, Sandman.
Yep.
And, of course, number one was Alan Moore's Swamp Thing run.
Oh, yes.
So it's actually, I don't know if that was Alan Moore. It was Vertigo Swamp Thing. I think that's been reprinted under Vertigo title. It was Mature Reader's Line when it first came out. But, right. You know, epic. I mean, look, Vertigo has been going for, you know, the better part of 30 years now, I believe. It's been going. It's longer than I think it has, actually, or maybe not quite that long. Actually, no, maybe I've got that completely wrong. Maybe it's 20 years.
One of the smartest moves DC ever did was creating the Vertigo line.
Oh, absolutely. I'm just seeing when the comics label came out. Oops, there's a Marvel label called Vertigo as well.
I didn't know that. No.
They launched in 1993. Sorry, so it'll be 20 years next year. Not 30 years, I'm sorry. And, I mean, that's amazing. And it's produced some amazing, huge titles over the last couple of years, and a couple that we'll have to cover. I mean, Hellblazer's been running for 200...
I was going to say, Hellblazer's one we have to cover. We have yet to cover, so...
And it's been running for 289 issues,
yeah.
You know? So, plus spin-offs, you know?
Question with Hellblazer is where do we, you know, jump in on that one? And no, Richard, we're not doing the whole thing in one go.
Okay. Well, what about all 171 issues of Swamp Thing?
No. Bad Richard.
115 issues of Fables?
No.
100 issues of 100 Bullets?
No.
89 issues of Animal Man?
Yeah, all right.
Okay. What about the other 55 issues of Sandman we didn't do?
Well, we could do that. Or we could go back to The Walking Dead.
It's true.
Are you ready to read the other 90 issues?
Yeah, why not? I've got them all here.
Actually, we have, our good friend David Longo over at Damn Good Cup was talking to me last night, and he actually said, when are you guys going back to Walking Dead? I really like that episode.
Yeah, we should really do that soon, actually, but we might do that when we run out of things to talk about. Look, at the moment, in terms of what Vertigo's currently doing, Hellblazer's still going.
Right.
Fables is still going.
Mm-hmm.
They've got that
new title, Spaceman, that's just started.
They've got Spaceman doing. Scalped is a great book if you haven't checked that one out.
Okay.
iZombie is
okay.
Oh,
you like that, don't you?
I like it, but I can see why people wouldn't. I'm slowly going off it. I quite like American Vampire. Mm-hmm. Sweet Tooth is great. It's by Jeff Lemire, the guy who's doing Animal Man and Swamp Thing as well.
Right.
There is the Unwritten as well is another one that they're running, and of course they've just recently started a couple of new ones. There's the new Deadwardians,
mm-hmm.
which is only two issues in, and there is that Dominic Laveau voodoo thing,
which you weren't too impressed with
the first issue. No, but I can see that it has the potential there for being a great book.
Right.
So look, you know, they seem to be being a little bit too mired in the supernatural at the moment, because they've basically got American Vampire, iZombie, Dominic Laveau, Voodoo Queen, and the New Deadwardians. So you've got two zombie books, a vampire book, and a voodoo book. Are all the newest ones they've released. They've also just released Fairest as well, which is a spin-off.
New Fables, yeah.
So you've got that and Fairy Tale books. A little bit worried that it's all a little bit too focused. But the other thing they are doing, of course, is their little crime series.
Mm.
Which are one-off graphic novels. And, of course, we covered a terrific Andy Diggle one a while back. It was Ratcatcher.
Yeah, and we were actually in the bookstore the other day together, and we were seeing a whole bunch of them. We're going, we need to do some more of these.
They're really great. I mean, like I'm saying, it's, as you said, great line, that has produced a whole lot of books that probably half comic book readers don't read. Mm. But it is further proof that comic books don't have to be Archie and Veronica.
Or capes.
Or capes.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah. Although I do love my capes.
I like capes too, and I'd like to see Archie and Veronica in capes.
Now, speaking of Archie and Veronica, we have, if you remember going back many weeks ago, we said we were going to do an Archie book at some point after doing Archie and the Punisher.
And we've decided which one we're going to do.
We know which one. We don't know when we're going to do it yet. We're going to actually sit down and work out our schedule very soon. But we are going to do Archie Meets Kiss.
What else can we do? Can we just mention quickly some of the other ones we found that we thought would be interesting? Models, Inc. has a
comic. But it was a crossover.
It was a Marvel crossover.
Yeah, it was Marvel's Models, Inc. And in it, the models become superheroes.
We found some gold.
We did. There's some great stuff.
So look out for that. I think we're going to get a little bit more eclectic in our selections. But look out for next week. It will be I've forgotten already. Look out next week. It's Iron Man Extremis.
Now, the reason we're doing Extremis, of course, is because all this rumor and talk that's been running around saying that the new Iron Man film is going to be based on Extremis.
Fact, it's substantiated because the first Iron Man film was based on the origin story from Extremis. So.
Exactly. And so Extremis is the first – is it six issues? Yeah, six issues.
Six issues.
Of volume four. Of
Invincible Iron Man.
Of Invincible Iron Man. And we had a chance to catch up and read it, and it was impressive.
It's written by Warren Ellis, so understandably impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. And really good artwork. So we'll talk about that more next week. So if you get a chance, try and go out and find a copy of Extremis and have a look at it, because it's a good read. You'll enjoy
it. Right.
Richard, yes. Where can people find more of you on the internet?
I'm here.
In Australia, no less.
Yeah. They can find me at therealbits.com. That's R-E-E-L-bits.com. They can also find me on Twitter at DVDBits.
Fantastic. And you can find me on geekactually.com or on Twitter at David McVeigh. And we also have our Facebook page, which we've mentioned before, which, of course, is facebook.com/behindthepanels. And we should also mention, as we did before, that you can send feedback to comics@geekactually.com or our Skype line, which is geekactually, all one word. We also have a phone number for that, which is 02-801-13167. Leave us a voicemail. We'd love to hear your voices. Talk to us.
Maybe. I mean, if you've got a really terrible voice, we probably don't want to hear
it. And, you know, try and keep it under a minute.
Yeah.
You know, because really, if you talk too long, we get bored.
Yeah, and you know, we obviously keep everything we do down to a minimum.
Yeah, welcome back. An hour, 26 minutes.
You know, it's been a while since I've done this.
The last episode, I'll remind people, was 31 minutes long.
I want to get this out of my system now because we've got another two shows to do this weekend. So.
Fair enough. Well, Richard, it's wonderful to hear your voice. It's wonderful to have you back.
Thank you, sir. It's great to be back, and I'm looking forward to actually getting stuck back into reading comics again.
Absolutely. We've got some good ones to read.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go read Free Comic Book Day New 52.
Definitely worth a read. So, and also, just while we're on the subject, Free Comic Book Day, awesome concept.
Absolutely, and I wish more people would do it. Apparently, Minotaur didn't run it this year.
Really?
No. I was talking to somebody today who said that they were actually – oh, no, was it this year or last year? Last year, I don't think they ran it. They were in Melbourne, and they didn't run it.
Mouse Guard, which is one of the books by Arkeia Studios, they did a free hardcover this year.
Wow. Well
so
done.
Free Comic Book Day is getting awesome.
Because remember, Free Comic Book Day is actually run by the distributor. It's not run by the comic book shops.
That's
and
right.
And so some of the comic book shops choose to opt out, which I don't understand why.
No, I can't see how getting free people into your store who might have never been into your store before.
Well, interestingly enough, I heard today, apparently, Jay and Silent Bob's Secret Stash hate Free Comic Book Day.
Wow.
They hate it. They think it just brings in lots of people and everything gets messy.
And that's exactly why comic book readers are dying out.
Yes, exactly. And on that note, I think we'll leave it for this week.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, Richard. See you next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye.